This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The Hamas resistance movement warns that Israel's planned attack on Rafah will have catastrophic repercussions and may cause tens of thousands of casualties. Hamas urges international rights organizations to document Israel's killing of a six-year-old Palestinian girl as a first step in legal action against the regime. And Iraq's former prime minister calls for total withdrawal of American forces, urging the government to set a date for the US to take its troops out. Thank you for joining us. Israel's plan to invade Rafah in southern Gaza Strip has drawn strong international reactions, with so many countries condemning it. Many observers say the political or the potential ground invasion in Rafah will lead to a catastrophe. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas warns that Israel's planned operation in overcrowded Rafah could cause tens of thousands of casualties. Hamas said that any military action would have catastrophic repercussions. Meanwhile, many of the Palestinians in Rafah say they will not abandon their homelands. In a statement, a large group of families of displaced Palestinians in Rafah called on all world powers to prevent an Israeli massacre in Gaza, and Israel's plan to invade Rafah, which lies on the Gaza Strip's border with Egypt, has also drawn international reactions. Jordan says another bloodbath in Gaza cannot be allowed. Spain and Germany warned of a humanitarian catastrophe if the plan went ahead. According to the UN, some 1.3 million Palestinians are living in unsanitary conditions in Rafah and have no access to running water. Survivors and witnesses of Israel's latest airstrikes on Rafah described their harrowing experiences, including losing friends and family members. Let's take a listen.
My sister and her husband were sleeping there in the room, and my mother and my other sister with her children in the living room, and me and my father in the room over here. Suddenly, a rocket fell on us. My sister, her husband, and their children, including my niece who is 2 months old, all gone.
Around 11 o'clock, the whole family was asleep, including the displaced people staying with us. We were woken by a massive explosion. I woke up to check and looked around the house, only to find that the ground floor was completely fine. The building above was burning. The fourth and fifth floors were hit by a rocket, possibly an F-16 aircraft. We were shocked to see the entire house burning. We began searching but couldn't find each other because of the darkness. We sat for about a quarter of an hour until we could see each other. We entered the room where my son was sleeping and found him, along with his wife, children, and mother-in-law, all dead and torn to pieces. Whether the Israeli army enter Rafah or not, our safety must be ensured. This means we should leave and head to a safe place, even though we are convinced there is no safe place. We have witnessed this in the north and Khan Yunis, and in the middle. They tell you there is a safe place, but on the way they bomb people. As long as there is no safe place, as long as there is a government like this, a Nazi-like government, there is no safe place in Gaza. They came with the intention to kill.
The Hamas resistance movement has called on international human rights organizations to document Israeli forces' killing of a six-year-old Palestinian girl in Gaza City. The movement said Hind Rajab, along with her relatives and two paramedics, were deliberately killed in cold blood by the Israeli forces' gunfire. Hamas urged international bodies to document the horrific crime as a prelude to taking legal action against Israel's criminal forces and its Nazi leaders. The Palestine Red Crescent Society accused Israel of deliberately targeting the ambulance it sent to rescue Hind Rajab, and she spent hours on the phone begging for help amid the sound of shooting echoing around. On Saturday, family members found Hind's body along with those of her uncle and aunt, their three children and two ambulance workers who had gone to save her. Thousands of protesters in the Austrian capital Vienna have taken to the streets to demand an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. Protesters marched through the city centre waving Palestinian flags and placards reading "Stop Infanticide." They also called for boycotting international companies supporting the Israeli genocide in Gaza, in particular McDonald's and Starbucks. Since the Israeli genocide in Gaza, people around the globe have taken to the streets to condemn the regime's crimes. They have urged their respective governments to boycott Israeli goods and sever ties with the regime. Thousands of Italians have taken to the streets of the capital in fresh pro-Palestine rallies. Heavy rain did not prevent people from participating in the umpteenth demonstration held in support of the besieged Gaza Strip. Here's a report.
On Saturday, in the Italian capital of Rome, thousands of people braved lashing rain to hold a rally to show solidarity with Palestinians under attack in the Gaza Strip. The demonstration, which started in one of Rome's most touristic areas near the iconic Colosseum, was organized by a string of groups including the Palestinian Youth Movement and the Association of Palestinians residing in Italy. A number of Italian political movements also took part to the demonstration.
What we have here is an Italian government which is utterly servile to the interests of Israel and the United States, and together with the EU is complicit in the genocide and ethnic cleansing against the Palestinians. And this is why the conflict is spreading in West Asia.
According to Italian authorities, more than 850 large and smaller rallies in support of Palestinians have been held across the country since the start of Israel's onslaught on Gaza in early October. Last week, some injured Palestinian children reportedly arrived in Italy from Egypt to be hospitalized in the country. People at the rally are saying, why can't the Italian government also work to stop Israel's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza?
Providing medical care to Palestinian wounded children is a highly hypocritical move by the Italian government in an attempt to rebuild its tarnished image. The Italian government is among the first to support Israel and continues its support even now that the International Court of Justice has recognized the dire humanitarian situation in Gaza.
The only hope I have now is that the latest peace talks have failed, is that some miracle will happen before Israel launches its final strike on the overcrowded town of Rafah.
Another major pro-Palestine rally was also held in Florence, while two large-scale demonstrations will be staged in Italy's northern cities of Milan and Bologna on Sunday. Max Civili, Rome.
Thousands of Israeli protesters have rallied in Tel Aviv demanding the resignation of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Protesters demanded the release of Israeli captives held by Palestinian resistance groups. They also call for holding snap elections. The premier has been under fire for prioritizing his political interests in Gaza over the lives of the captives. Netanyahu has been in hot water as he's embroiled in a series of scandals. The Israeli premier is charged with fraud and breach of trust in a number of cases. This has prompted protesters to take to the streets almost every weekend to call for his immediate resignation. Iraq's former prime minister has once again called for the total withdrawal of American forces from the country. Abdul Adel Abdul Mahdi was speaking in an interview with Iran's Al Alam news network. He said the Iraqi government must take a clear position on this issue and set a date for the U.S. to take its troops out of Iraq. Abdul Mahdi said American forces were deployed to Iraq based on the Iraqi government's decision, and their withdrawal does not need any decision by the UN Security Council or the Iraqi parliament. He added that Americans entered Iraq under the pretext of protecting Iraqi people, but are now killing them. His remarks came after a recent US military drone attack, which killed a senior commander of the Kataib Hezbollah resistance group. Back in January, Iraq's Prime Minister Mohammad Shia Sudani said Baghdad wants US-led military forces to immediately leave due to their destabilizing effects. The Pentagon, however, has announced that it has no plans to withdraw its troops from Iraq. Thousands of Yemenis have once again gathered in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, and other cities in support of Palestine. Abdul Latif Awashali reports.
Yemenis from all walks of life have taken to the streets to reaffirm their solidarity with the Palestinian people. They have also expressed their willingness to join Yemen's armed forces in preparation for a potential large-scale conflict with the US and UK.
These million marches take place every Friday in the capital, Sana'a, and other cities to send a message to the world that we will not submit to intimidation, and also a message to the people of Gaza that we are with them and they are not alone. The spread of military courses in various governorates and the willingness of Yemenis to join them is evidence of the readiness of all Yemenis to confront American and British forces in a ground war.
Protesters chanted slogans denouncing US and UK aggression against their country and demanded that the Yemeni army continue its naval operations against those who initiated a war against Yemen.
These millions who took to the streets are a reserve army and are ready at any moment to join the Yemeni armed forces in their battle with the enemies of Palestine, whether on the land or at sea.
Our protest today is to express the steadfastness of our support for the Palestinian people and the people of Gaza in particular, who suffer under the siege by America and Israel, who kill their children, women, and the elderly on a daily basis. We affirm our support for Palestine and we will continue to support it, whether through naval operations or by going out to the streets.
Since January 11th, the US and UK have launched multiple rounds of airstrikes against Yemeni territories aimed at undermining the Yemeni army's capabilities and halting Yemen's naval operations. However, they have likely failed to achieve their goals as Yemeni naval attacks have continued.
People gathered here to protest, holding their weapons to send the message to their enemies that they are well prepared for any act of aggression. They believe that the US and UK are not bold enough to attempt invading Yemen overland. Abdul Latif Washali, Sana'a.
During a visit to the Lebanese capital, Beirut, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian reiterated Tehran's call for a ceasefire in Gaza. He also demanded Washington stop its support for the Israeli regime, saying it will only sink the U.S. in the swamp of war.
In his third visit to Lebanon since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza, Iran's Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian called on the United States to immediately stop its support for the Israeli war on Gaza.
The Zionist regime looks forward to bringing the U.S. down with it and drowning it in the swamp of war in the region. The U.S. must stop its support for the Israeli regime, the killer of children.
Iran's top diplomat met with the Lebanese caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati, stressing the need to exert all efforts to reach an end to the Israeli aggression against Gaza. He also met with Lebanese Parliament Speaker Nabih Berri and Lebanese Foreign Minister Abdullah Bouhabib, who uncovered that Lebanon has presented a proposal for a possible solution.
Lebanon's suggestion for a sustainable solution to reinstate calm and stability in South Lebanon includes a comprehensive basket of solutions, which guarantees the implementation of UN Security Council Resolution 1701, ending all Israeli violations of Lebanon's sovereignty, and guarantees the withdrawal of Israeli forces from all Lebanese territory, including the Sheba Farms and Kfar Shuba Hills.
Iran's foreign minister reaffirmed his country's position of calling for a stop to the Israeli hostilities in Gaza.
If the U.S. genuinely wants to reach tranquility in the region, then the means for that would be through stopping the genocidal mass killings and crimes and enforcing a halt to the war launched against Gaza and the West Bank.
The Iranian minister also met with Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah and discussed with him the latest political and security developments in the region, especially in the Gaza Strip and South Lebanon. Observers believe Abdullahian's visit differs from the Western envoy's visits, since the Islamic Republic of Iran considers the security of Lebanon as the security of Iran and the region. Usually, visits by Iran's foreign minister include back-to-back meetings with top Lebanese officials, including Hezbollah's leader, Said Hassan Nasrallah. But this visit is different since it comes at a time when the region is on the verge of a possible war. And despite all attempts by Amir Abdullahian to push for a ceasefire, the U.S. and Israel are continuing the massacre of Palestinians. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
With that, we come to the end of this bulletin. Thank you for listening. Take care and bye-bye for now.
Epic, glory, honor. This is Bahman, the month which reminds us of love and empathy.
از ابتدا تا انتها مردمی از جنس
the world through IRIB English Radio. the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
In the limelight.
U.S. President Joe Biden has blamed his Republican rival Donald Trump for bringing border deal to a verge of collapse. The $118 billion package ties U.S. immigration policy to aid for Ukraine. We take a look at the U.S. media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. America's national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. President Joe Biden said one person is to blame for the seeming collapse of a bipartisan package to change immigration policy and provide aid to Ukraine and Israel. And that person is Donald Trump. Speaking from the White House, Joe Biden said the $118 billion bill is the result of extraordinary effort by a bipartisan group of senators and represents the most fair, humane reforms in our immigration system in a long time and the toughest set of reforms to secure the border ever. Joe Biden added, now all indications are that this bill won't even forward to the Senate floor. Why, he said, a simple reason, Donald Trump. Because Donald Trump thinks it's bad for him politically, even though it helps the country. President Biden continued, he'd rather weaponize the issue than actually solve it, claiming that Trump was threatening Republican lawmakers if they didn't oppose the measure. President Biden added, and looks like they're caving in. Frankly, they owe it to the American people to show some spine and do what they know to be right. President Biden, who has been hammered by Republicans for months over the surge in migrant encounters at the southern border with Mexico, faces low approval numbers on the issue heading into the 2024 presidential race. In his remarks, Joe Biden sought to flip the script heading into what's likely to be a 2020 general election rematch, suggesting he would hit the issue hard on the campaign trail. Every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is because of Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends. If the bill fails, I want to be absolutely clear about something. The American people are going to know why it failed. I'll be taking this issue to the country, and the voters are going to know, he added. The bill text was unveiled on Sunday evening, after months of negotiations, and was initially praised by President Biden, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, and Senate Republican Leader Mitch McConnell. But just hours after its release, it was deemed dead on arrival by House Speaker Mike Johnson, who has spoken with Donald Trump frequently on the issue. And now it's on very thin ice in the U.S. Senate, as a growing number of Republicans say they will block a key procedural vote set for Wednesday, 7th of February, to move the package forward. Democrat Chris Murphy, one of the lead negotiators, expressed exasperation at mounting Republican opposition to the bill in a floor speech on Tuesday, 6th of February, asking his colleagues, what the hell just happened? President Biden, too, criticized Republicans for backtracking on their statements from the fall when they requested a bill that tied any further aid to Ukraine to changes in immigration policy. Just months ago, the Republicans were asking for this exact bill to deal with the border, to provide support for Ukraine and for Israel. President Biden said, and now it's here, and they're saying, never mind, folks, we've got to move past toxic politics. It's time to stop playing games with the world waiting. The national broadcaster CBS News has also covered the same story and tells us more. President Joe Biden urged Congress on Tuesday, 6th of February, to pass a national security supplemental bill that would provide funding for Ukraine and for Israel and border security, hoping to bolster support as the deal appears to be falling apart on Capitol Hill. The president's plea came as more House and Senate Republicans have said they oppose the Senate-negotiated deal, which would provide $118 billion for foreign aid and overhaul key portions of the U.S. immigration system. Opposition from House Republicans was anticipated, but a growing number of Senate Republicans have also come out against the long-awaited agreement since it was released last Sunday, potentially tanking it for now. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy, Republican Senator James Lankford, and Independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema for weeks took the lead in hammering out a deal on the immigration portions of the larger package. In remarks at the White House, President Biden blamed one person for crumbling Republican support for the bill, former President Donald Trump. The result of all this hard work is a bipartisan agreement that represents the most fair, humane reforms in our immigration system in a long time, and the toughest set of reforms to secure the border ever, President Biden said. But now all indications are that this bill won't even forward to the Senate floor. Why? A simple reason: that's Donald Trump. Because Mr. Trump thinks it's bad for him politically. President Biden added, "So for the last 24 hours, he's done nothing, I'm told, but reach out to Republicans in the House and the Senate and threaten them and try to intimidate them to vote against this proposal. It looks like they're caving in. Frankly, they owe it to the American people to show some spine and do what they know to be right." President Biden said the American people want a solution that puts an end to divisive debates about the border with Mexico. "Doing nothing is not an option," Biden said. "Republicans have to decide. For years they said they want to secure the border. Now they have the strongest border bill this country has ever seen. Look, I understand the former president is desperately trying to stop this bill because he's not interested in solving the border problem. He wants a political issue to run against." Joe Biden said he'll turn Republican opposition to the border security legislation into a campaign issue. He said, "Every day between now and November, the American people are going to know that the only reason the border is not secure is because of Donald Trump and his MAGA Republican friends." On Tuesday, 6th of February, some Republican senators suggested they would support advancing the foreign aid portion of that deal on its own, contradicting the long-standing Republican position that no foreign aid would pass without border security measures. Republican Senator Lindsey Graham reportedly said it's time to reconstruct the package and limit it to foreign aid. Republican Senator John Cornyn also suggested the possibility of splitting off foreign aid. Some Republicans blasted Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell for signing off an agreement without sufficient input from rank-and-file Republicans. Democratic Senator and one of the lead negotiators of the bill, Chris Murphy, took to the Senate floor on Tuesday, 6th of February, blasting Republicans for the deal falling apart. Senator Murphy said the Senate GOP conference now just seems to be another subsidiary of the Trump campaign. Republicans who oppose the final product say the bill does not go far enough to deter illegal border crossings. The Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, said the Senate bill would be dead on arrival in the House. Separately, the lower chamber plans to vote on a standalone bill to provide more aid to the Israeli regime. The Biden administration announced on Monday night that President Biden would veto the bill if it reaches his desk, in the light of White House's insistence on the border national security deal.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. I am Atta, the host of this program. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai, to discuss today's topic. Sheikh Fadai, salam alaikum.
Salam alaikum wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Rouhani, salam alaikum.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
For today's discussion, we want to talk about the Islamic Revolution of Iran, which took place in 1979. How did it spread the message of opposition against taghut or oppression all across the world of Islam? Sheikh Fadai, they say that the Islamic Revolution, which was founded by the late Imam Khomeini, brought a new message to the world of Islam. It was a kind of enlightenment or awakening among the Islamic leaders all across the world. Some messages, or some, it's better to say, concepts of Islam and values were revived again, something like adala, acting against opposition, or, for example, defending the rights of the oppressed ones all across the world of Islam. What's your opinion on that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know, before Imam Khomeini, Islamic scholars didn't believe that they have to stand against the oppressors. You know, they didn't care about oppressing rulers and oppressing power. Some of them believe that we just do our job. We study and we teach and we spread our message, Islamic message, to other people. That's it. Political system, political issue is not our subject. And some of them may believe that, yes, we have to be engaged in political issues, but we don't have the power to do that.
Yes.
We don't have the capability and we don't have the support from people to do that. Because of that, none of them did what Imam Khomeini did. But Imam Khomeini believed that our religion has two parts. One of them is individual part and the other one is
social-political
part. Yes. Because religion means the plan of life. Mm-hmm. If God created this man, mankind,
yes,
and gave him a plan for life, yes, so he should have considered two, yes, aspects of his life.
So Imam Khomeini's ideas were not something new.
No.
They have existed in Islam before.
It was real Islam.
Yes, okay.
So religion means plan of life.
Yes.
So this plan should consist both aspects,
of
whether
life,
individual, yes, and social.
Yes.
We cannot say that Islam or religion, yes, is just plan of individual, mm-hmm, aspects of life, leaving the social part, which is more important, yes, than individual.
Because some might criticize, for example, the late Imam Khomeini and the Islamic Republic of Iran, that the late Imam Khomeini ideologized, or is better to say politicized, the religion of Islam.
No.
This is not so.
This is not new.
Okay.
You know, if you pay attention to Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, what did he do?
Mm-hmm.
First of all, he talked about his religion,
yes,
and invited people.
Yes.
But after he came to Medina,
uh-huh,
and had the support of people,
yes,
had the power
establish
to do
a
what?
State,
establish
right,
a government.
Yes, yes, okay.
So this was not a new idea.
Mm, okay.
Imam Khomeini just revived the Islamic, mm-hmm, idea,
yes,
not to create a new theory.
Yes.
So because of this deep belief in Islam, Imam Khomeini decided to against the oppressors,
uh-huh,
as he was ordered by Islam.
Yes.
So, but it was not easy.
Yes.
So, okay, it needed different factors.
Yes.
Factors of the founder,
yes,
and factors of the revolution. That,
yes, yes.
And we can talk about,
yes,
that.
Yes. We will get back to the main factors for the establishment of this new government. But Sheikh Rouhani, on that time, in 1979, the world was ruled by two important ideologies. One of them was the leftist, for example, communist, Leninist, for example, parties around the world, which was mainly known as the Eastern Bloc. And the other one was the imperialist, new liberal one, which was led by United States of America, which was known as the Western Bloc. Now, a new thought and opinion comes into the scene. That is Imam Khomeini. He believed that the Pahlavi regime was a Taghuti one, and now he is going to act against it. And a new bloc or a new piece of government or establishment is being founded by the late Imam Khomeini. What were the main characteristics of his opinion and his establishment?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know that nowadays in the modern world, some of the values which are world widely accepted is, for example, like democracy, which means that the people's willings and wishes should be fulfilled.
Yes.
I mean, any system, any political system should be based on the people's votes and people's, let's say, ideas.
Yes.
At that time, when Imam Khomeini, rahmatullahi alayhi, established these systems, he referred to the people and based on the kind of election system, electoral system, he actually established this system. It was the willing of the people, of the nation, who wanted to bring about a kind of system which is completely in harmony with their own culture, with their own civilization, with their own value systems, with their own principles, religion, aqa'id, whatever. Okay. So that's why if we want to respect the culture of a nation, the religion of a nation, the ideas, the views of the nation, we have to respect the system that comes out from this kind of, let's say, culture and system.
Yes.
So it was the reason that Imam Khomeini referred to his own people to ask them that, okay, what is the best system for you? What is the most appropriate system for you?
Mm-hmm.
We should not listen, as you rightly mentioned, neither to the East nor the West, because they have their own benefits, they have their own interests, and they whatever they do is in their own favor. So we as a nation, we as an independent nation, we have to decide about ourselves and by ourselves. That is why I think this system was successful, because the people, the population of Iran at that time, they supported this system as there was a kind of referendum at the beginning of this revolution. It is said that even 99% of the people voted in favor of this Islamic Republic, which is based both on Islamic values plus modern values, I mean democratic system, which is accepted worldwide nowadays. So that's why this system was successful.
Of course, we know that the Jumhuriya Islamiya Iran is very much different from democracy in the Western
world. Yeah, it's an Islamic democracy. Yes.
You know, the people really vote.
Yes,
you know,
and
all the votes are counted, we can say, in the polling stations.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
But Sheikh Fadai, we know that this system was established on that time. It is Islamic, at the same time Republic of Iran. So what are the main characteristics? As you said, what factors play the role in this system?
This is, I told you, no one before Imam Khomeini could do that. I mean, this kind of revolution. We have to think about the factors.
Mm-hmm.
There are some factors about the person, I mean, the founder of that revolution, and some factors about the kinds of that revolution.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to mention in brief, I have to say that Imam Khomeini had three characteristics which the others didn't have. The first one, his knowledge.
Yes.
Whether in the science of Aqli or Naqli.
Mm-hmm.
Naqli means focused on Quran and Hadith, and Aqli means philosophical kind of knowledge. All friends and enemies acknowledge that he was in the highest level of knowledge.
Yes. But he was a scholar.
Yeah, he was a scholar.
Yes.
If you look at the kings all around the world, none of them were was a scholar,
or at least
like him.
Most of them were
illiterate.
Yes, or rulers, political or soldiers or kings. That's right.
The second factor and characteristic is his spiritual aspect. I mean, the taqwa.
Yes.
Again, all friends and enemies acknowledge that he was arif and zahid.
Yes.
You know, if the leader and imam observe the religion deeply and completely, and he improves his soul, then if this person invite people, he can have an impact on people and people follow him. But if I do not follow the religion as well as I should, if my soul is not grown, if I invite people, people do not follow me.
Yes.
And the third one is his intuition and good comprehension of political issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe in traditional Hausa, most of the scholars, they were not after political issues.
Even some of the ulama at his time were against
Ayatollah
Khomeini.
Yes,
why are you founding such a religious, for example, government or
but
something?
Imam Khomeini studied about that. Mm-hmm. Imam Khomeini, for example, in the parliament at the time of Ayatollah Mudarris, Imam Khomeini at that time was a young person.
Yes.
Sometime he used to go to the parliament and just watch what's happening in the parliament.
Yes.
So he had a good comprehension to political issue. These are about his personality. But what about the revolution? What were the differences for the revolution of Imam Khomeini and other revolution?
Yes.
The first is that Imam Khomeini paid attention to people and used people's support. He didn't say that because I'm an Islamic scholar, I don't need people, just Velayatullah, and that's it. People have to follow me. No. You know, not this fake democracy in the West that we can see, but the real democracy, real, as we call it, Jumhuri.
Jumhuria, that's right.
Yes.
Okay,
it is, you use Islam as the law and rule, and use people as the pillars of that government. Then the second one was his courage and resistance and iman. You know, against a lot of problems, I don't know, wars, killing a lot of people, he never stopped.
Yes.
And the last one is that he had good connection with the world after the revolution.
Yes.
We didn't cut our connection with the world.
Yes,
yes, maybe some few powers like America or Israel, but what about others?
Yes.
Imam Khomeini had a good connection with them and
especially
invited some of them.
Especially so many of the Islamic lands on that time were enlightened and awakened that I could really remember, even the footage of the videos are available, that the Muslim lands welcomed Ayatollah Khomeini very much. How an Islamic character or a Muslim can, for example, come, can win the game against, for example, taghut or oppressions or people who were after Western style of life. That's why so many of the characters on that time even converted to the religion of Islam. They came to the Islamic Republic of Iran and they were welcomed here.
That is exactly prophetic pattern of government.
Okay. That's right. Islam and Nabi Muhammadi,
yes,
pure
exactly.
Muhammad and Islam. Okay, Sheikh Rouhani, your final remarks regarding the enlightenment, the awakening in the Islamic lands led by Ayatollah Khomeini.
Yes, the final remark could be this, that this revolution actually was a kind of revival to the religious teachings and doctrines because in the 20th century, because of the modernization of the Western, let's say, part of the world, it had its influences on the Eastern nations, on the Islamic, let's say, countries. At that time, every Muslim country tried to modernize their own systems to follow the modern values. But of course, this revolution actually gave a kind of revival or reviving to the Islamic values, the religious values, saying that, of course, we can establish a political system based on religious Islamic doctrines and values.
Okay. Thank you very much, Sheikh Rouhani and Sheikh Fadai, for a nice elaboration on this concept. We again express our congratulations on the arrival of the anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution of Iran and the Establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Bahman 22nd. It was very kind of you, and thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program. Viewpoints. For more information, visit our website at parsuri.ir, Call of Islam page. To another episode, God bless you. Fi amanullah.
Allah, 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 Allah.
إن الذين قالوا ربنا الله ثم استقاموا تتنزل عليهم الملائكة ألا تخافوا ولا تحزنوا وأبشروا بالجنة التي كنتم توعدون
Allah, 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 la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Allah, 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 la ilaha illallah.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The United Nations has declared that Israeli attacks on Rafah in southern Gaza could result in large-scale loss of civilian lives. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. The United Nations Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says Israeli attacks on Rafah in southern Gaza on the border with Egypt could lead to large-scale loss of civilian lives. Jens Lerker, a spokesperson for the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, said, "To be clear, intensified hostilities in Rafah in this situation could lead to large-scale loss of civilian lives, and we must do everything possible within our power to avoid that." He added, "Under international humanitarian law, indiscriminate bombing of densely populated areas may amount to war crimes." Jens Lerker, a spokesperson for the UN Office for Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, was speaking in Geneva, Switzerland. He said, "We can warn what might unfold with the ground invasion, and we can make clear what the law says." The Israeli regime has pressed on with its genocidal campaign and threatened a new ground assault on Rafah, where over half of Gaza's 2.3 million population are now living, mostly in makeshift tents. About 1.4 million people are sheltering in Rafah after being ordered there by Israeli forces, which previously described the area as a safe zone. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, recently reported that intensified Israeli bombardment from air, land and sea continues across much of the Gaza Strip, resulting in further civilian casualties, displacement of the population and destruction of civilian infrastructure. The UN Humanitarian Office said the influx of thousands of internally displaced persons into Rafah was due to intense fighting in Khan Yunis, combined with reports of an increase in strikes in Rafah on Monday and Sunday. In its latest aggression, the Israeli regime killed several people, including two children, in a new airstrike on the southern Gaza city of Rafah. Elsewhere in southern Gaza, the Israeli army targeted the vicinity of Nasser Hospital, that's located in the city of Khan Yunis, which has been the focal point of Israeli strikes in recent weeks. In separate attacks on the same city, at least 11 people lost their lives. The genocidal war against Gaza has continued for over 4 months now, with a death toll approaching 27,600 as of Tuesday, 6th of February, many of those women and children. Also, a senior commander of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, has warned the Israeli regime that endangering Iran's interests anywhere in the world will not go unanswered. Brigadier General Abbas Nilfurushan, the IRGC's deputy commander for operations, said, "The Israeli regime should know that we settle our score with our enemies on a daily basis. We would not leave unanswered whatever action the Israeli regime dares to take against our interests anywhere in the world," Nilfurushan asserted on Tuesday, 6th of February. The top IRGC commander said, "The Islamic Republic is the most prominent missile and drone power in West Asia region," noting that the region's geopolitical configuration has changed based on Iran's power. He also said the United States is incapable of protecting the Zionist regime like in the past. He added, "So the Israeli regime has resorted to the strategy of war between wars, or war in the grey zone." He said the main goal of such a strategy consists of attempting to weaken the constituents of Iran's power, such as the Islamic Republic's nuclear, missile, drone, and regional might. Nilfurushan identified the main principles of the strategy as engaging in intelligence warfare and retaining the level of war beneath our threshold of tolerance. As a means of confronting the strategy, the top IRGC commander said, "Iran has attached special importance to intelligence protection." Also, the leader of Yemen's Ansarullah resistance movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, says the recent rising aggression by the evil trio of the United States of America, Britain, and the Israeli regime against Yemen will not affect the determination of the Yemeni people to support Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip. The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Abdul Malik al-Houthi, made the remark in a televised speech on Tuesday, 6th of February, to commemorate the 20th martyrdom anniversary of the former Ansarullah chief Hussein Badruddin al-Houthi. Badruddin al-Houthi was killed whilst leading a revolt against the then Saudi-backed regime in Sana'a in 2004. Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the late Ansarullah leader promoted steadfastness and sacrifice in the face of the US invasion and colonialism, and reaffirmed the necessity of unity and confronting the conspiracies targeting Muslim nations. He praised the courage of the Yemeni people in the fight against the global arrogance and threats from the hegemonic powers. He said, "Our nation today is a very great nation with the most important geographical locations, which enjoys very enormous economic resources, but it has been shackled," he said. The Ansarullah leader underscored Yemen's firm stance in supporting Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. He said Yemen will continue to launch retaliatory strikes on Israeli-tied shipping in the Red Sea, despite rising aggression by United States and Britain. Abdul Malik al-Houthi said, The United States terrorizes most countries, most of their leaders, and most of their armies with the language of threat and intimidation. What is the position of our Islamic nation in comparison with the Arab world and elsewhere? Who are hundreds of millions regarding what's happening today in Palestine? He added, our beloved people, despite the fact that after the aggression that lasted 9 years and has not ended yet, took a distinguished position. We set out to confront the evil trio of the United States, Britain, and the Israeli regime, and we are ready for the sacrifices, and we are confident of victory. He stressed that Yemen is a free country which cannot be influenced by U.S. hegemony. He said, if we had been followers of treason and connivance, the Americans and the British would not have carried out the aggression against us. Abdul Malik al-Houthi said, no matter what the evil trio does, it will not affect our position and it will not break the will of the Yemeni people. He vowed to back the Palestinian people and their cause until the very end. Turkey's Anadolu News Agency has also covered the same story and tells us more. The United Nations Humanitarian Office has warned on Tuesday, 6th of February, that everything possible must be done to avoid intensified hostilities in Rafah City in southern Gaza Strip, which may lead to a large-scale loss of civilian lives. Jens Lerke, the spokesperson for the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, OCHA, told the United Nations briefing in Geneva, Switzerland, he said, we can warn what might unfold with a ground invasion, and we can make clear what the law says. And under international humanitarian law, indiscriminate bombing of densely populated areas may amount to war crimes. He added, so to be clear, intensified hostilities in Rafah in this situation could lead to large-scale loss of civilian lives, and we must do everything possible within our power to avoid that. The Israeli regime's war minister, Yoav Gallant, recently announced that Rafah is the Israeli army's next target in a press conference, claiming that Rafah is the last remaining stronghold of the Palestinian Islamic Resistance group Hamas. The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza announced on Tuesday, 6th of February, that at least 27,585 Palestinians have been killed and 66,978 others injured in Israeli attacks on Gaza since 7th of October last year. The Israeli offensive on Gaza has left 85% of the population internally displaced amid acute shortages of food, clean water and medicine, while 60% of Gaza's infrastructure has been damaged or destroyed, according to figures by the United Nations.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.